acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 131, Knit the Sea, Monday, August 8th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. This episode will be a second edition of a summer travelogue without the usual segments, but I do have a few pieces of news and information for the beginning of the show. July has concluded, and so I selected a winner for the Eat Your Words Read-Along Prize for July. July's prize is a set of note cards from Joanna of Knitspin Farm. And there are several different sets of note cards on offer, so you will need to select the one that appeals most to you. And our very lucky winner is for post number 120, who is Vicky, also known as Sunny Day Knits on Ravelry. So Vicky, let me know that you know about this prize, and I will put you in touch with Joanna Spring. Vicky wrote that she is reading from Recipes for a Beautiful Life by Rebecca Barry. And many of you are making posts about your summer reading with a culinary twist. This past week, I had quite a bit of time on the beach to continue reading Coming Home to Eat, Pleasures and Politics of Local Food by Gary Paul Nebon. And that was pretty enjoyable. I think it's better to read this book in big chunks rather than a little bit at a time. So having time for beach reading got me a lot more invested in this story. And I did post a couple of passages that I thought were particularly illuminating from this text. I finally got to a point in the center where I feel like he provides a thesis for all the writing he's doing. As I mentioned in a previous episode, the author is trying to do a lot of different kinds of work in this writing, and sometimes I've found it a little bit confusing. But the more I understand his thesis and his objective with the book, the more patience I have for his writing. The summer read-along, Eat Your Words summer read-along, continues through August, and August's prize is a $25 gift certificate from the Woolly Thistle, an online Etsy shop with excellent yarns from across the pond, as well as Hiya needles, a big selection of Hiya needles. All you need to do to be in the running for the August prize is to post about your summer food-related reading in the Ravelry thread, and I'll be drawing a winner at random and announcing that prize winner sometime in the beginning of September. I have also opened a poll on the Ravelry group. This has its own separate thread. It says poll, knitting needles. And with this poll, I'm collecting some information for an upcoming episode where I'll talk about knitting needles, knitting needle storage, and a review of some of the needle brands that I have been using since I began knitting about 5 or 6 years ago. Since I'm a relatively new knitter, and since my experience with different brands of needles is limited, I thought it would be a good idea to source additional information from listeners that I could include in the show. So there's a poll, and then there's also a few prompts for you to share either information or questions you have about needles, and I will incorporate that information into this upcoming episode. There is a prize associated with participation in this thread, so you definitely want to check it out. This is the first time I've mentioned it on the podcast, but already quite a few listeners have found the thread and have been posting to it. So it's an interesting thing to check out. This past week, I ventured to Cape Cod, Massachusetts for a beach vacation, and I thought I would continue with the same type of structure or lack of structure from the previous episode and just provide a bit of a travelogue of my time on Cape Cod. My destination on Cape Cod is all the way at the very tip to a town called Provincetown. I first got to know Provincetown well over 10 years ago when I began taking some writing workshops and also a visual arts workshop at the Fine Arts Work Center right in the heart of Provincetown. That was my first taste of the town, and then since then I've vacationed there a number of times, sometimes for a week, sometimes for a luxurious 2 weeks. But it's been 3 summers since Samuel and I have been to Provincetown, and we were very keen to get back. And we made time in our summer and in our budget for a week-long stay in Provincetown. So I thought I would spend some time this morning talking about this place I love very much, and you can just let your mind wander and go on a little bit of a mental vacation, or maybe you will even consider Provincetown as a destination in your future. First, a little bit of geography. If you take your left arm and you flex it like you're making a muscle, and then you extend your index finger to kind of point back down at your left shoulder, you will have formed along the left side of your body a kind of a map of the eastern seaboard, where your left side is the East Coast and your arm is Cape Cod sticking out into the ocean. And Cape Cod has regions called the Lower Cape, the Mid Cape, which is where your elbow is, and the Outer Cape, which is your forearm and your hand and your extended finger. And all the way at the tip of your index finger, almost looking back along the inside of the bay, that's Provincetown, all the way at the end. Provincetown isn't someplace you end up. It is a destination, and you need to make an effort to get there, especially during the summer with low gas prices and the traffic on Cape Cod. It's really an endeavor to get there, but it's such a special place once you do. One of the things I tend to do before I visit Provincetown is to reread a book called Land's End by Michael Cunningham. Several authors were asked to contribute to a travel series, and there are books on different towns around the United States and around the world, and they're written by a rather well-known author who happens to know that town or city very well. And Michael Cunningham writes about Provincetown lovingly, intelligently, and with a view toward its history, but also to its future. And much of the information that I'm going to share with you today is I've kind of internalized over the years of my visits there and my many, many readings of Land's End. So first, a little bit about its geography. Provincetown is located basically on a sandbar. It's surrounded by ocean and by bay, so there's this unbelievably beautiful quality of light there. And because it's out in the ocean, there's constantly a breeze coming from the ocean or coming from the bay, so the effect is this kind of constant movement. The air is almost never still. And so you get this light and you get this movement, which creates an energy. And I think those qualities are what has made Provincetown very attractive to visual artists and also to writers over the years. And the place has become a kind of artist's colony. The Outer Cape is protected under the national parks as National Seashore. When the colonists came, and I never learned this in school, but the original landing place of the pilgrims on the Mayflower was the area now known as Provincetown. And being on a sandbar and rather exposed, the place was found undesirable and inhospitable. And so the pilgrims moved further inland to the part that we all learn about in school now. But Pilgrim's Monument in Provincetown is this huge marble structure, and that is meant to recognize the place as the original landing site of the pilgrims. But one of the things that the colonists did over the years is they stripped the Cape, the entire Cape, of much of its mature tree life. And the result of that is that the sand started moving around quite a bit without that plant life rooting it in place. And it became an untenable situation. And so with the creation of the national parks and the designation of the Outer Cape as National Seashore, the plant life is returning slowly to the dunes. And so unlike a lot of places where there's beach, just sand and grasses, Provincetown has beach forest. And when you go to the beach, there's no commercialism, no building, very few structures, and a lot of rules about what you can and cannot do on the beach, so that it has maintained its pristine atmosphere. When you go to the beach, it's just the beach. And you need to walk quite a distance to get to the beach. Our favorite beach is Race Point Beach, which has a very deep beach, quite a long walk over the dunes. And it's just so pristine and beautiful once you get there. You can see whales right from your beach chair. We always take our binoculars. There are just about hourly visits from harbor seals that swim about 20 yards or so from the water's edge. And they're always very curious about people, so they lift their heads up and look at everyone as they're swimming by. And it's just a really incredible beach experience. Very, very different from the Jersey Shore, which is where I grew up and the kind of beach that I was used to visiting before I encountered Provincetown. Some of Provincetown's original inhabitants had a seafaring life, and I really like the colonial aspect of the town, including several houses that I always try to see each time I go on some walks when I'm there. At one time, there was an extent, the furthest reach of the Cape was its own town called Long Point. Most of the time it was accessible only by boat because the tides meant that the land route was covered or it was eroded because it's essentially a sandbar. And there were some folks living out there. At its peak, there were about 60 families, about 200 people. It had its own post office. It was really kind of an outpost. Many of the people were engaged in fishing and boating or the salt works that were there. But as the popularity and the financial viability of the salt works started to erode, the people found their position at Long Point untenable. And so the community dissolved and the houses were moved. About 30 houses were moved by barge back into the main section of Provincetown. Most of these are located at the west end, but there are even a few at the east end. And they are designated with these beautiful blue plaques that have a boat with a house sitting on top of it and Long Point Light far in the distance. And that indicates that this house was once located way out on the farthest reaches of the Cape and has been moved. They are gorgeous colonial homes, and the homeowners have taken pains to renovate and restore them. One of my favorite activities is to go on a long, long walk one morning and go from all the way from the east end of town all the way out to the very tip on the west end and to see many of these colonial houses along the way. So the town, the main section of Provincetown, is sort of this weird hodgepodge of colonial charm and commercialism and beach town. Over the years, Provincetown has transitioned from a fishing hub to an artist colony. It's now something of a gay mecca, so there's quite a variety of nightlife and color, and it's a really vibrant and lively place to be. Because I live in a place where you have to get in a car to drive to almost anything, I really enjoy the aspect of my vacation in P-Town, where you just park your car and you walk or bike absolutely everywhere. It's really not convenient to drive in the main section of the town because Commercial Street is only one way and the sidewalks are so narrow that you really can't walk side by side on the sidewalk in most parts of town, so everyone just uses the street as the sidewalk. And even though the street is a one-way street, you always need to look both ways because there's an amazing amount of bike traffic on Commercial Street. Provincetown is also a dog town. There are dogs everywhere. Many of them are elevated to the status of people. Shopkeepers know them by name. They have personalities. We saw this amazing German Shepherd who skates on a longboard with his owner all the way down Commercial Street. It's pretty extraordinary. There are some beautiful, beautiful gardens in P-Town. They thrive on the amazing amounts of light. Being a shade gardener myself, I'm always struck with pangs of jealousy over these amazing flowers in the P-Town gardens. And one interesting factoid is that because the town is on a sandbar, there's really no natural soil. So originally, the soil for all of those gardens came from European ships who would fill their holds with soil, bring it across, sell it to the colonists, and then for ballast for their ships on the way back on the transatlantic voyage, they would fill up with rocks from the coastline. And this continued for quite some time because the soil was very valuable. They could get a very high price for that. That actually some of the coastline started to be affected by the amount of rocks that were being taken away. And so that practice had to be banned after time. So it's interesting to pass these gardens and to think about the fact that the original soil, some of it was British soil or maybe French soil, coming over from Europe and being sold to the colonists. Since Samuel and I have visited P-Town a number of times, and since some of our stays were 2 weeks long, there are a number of favorite things that we have to do during our stay there, and we quickly realized that it would not be possible during this visit to do all of them during our 1 week stay. We were also staying somewhat further east in the town than we have in the past, so the main section of town was a bit more of a walk away. But we had an Airbnb location in the wooded section of town, which is really kind of neat for a beach vacation because there aren't too many towering trees in town center. And we had a third floor kind of artist studio loft. And when you walked outside in the deck, you were in the treetops. So it was kind of like having your own treehouse. We did some of our usual visits and our usual activities and some new things as well. So I'll just name a few of them. A visit to Provincetown would not be complete without a coffee stop at the Wired Puppy, which is our favorite coffee shop. It's also non-negotiable that we dine at Front Street, which is an amazing Italian restaurant in town. Strangers and Saints is new to us since we visited last, and that is sort of an up-tempo, small plates, excellent bar type of restaurant. That was a lot of fun. Having gelato at the Purple Feather is a must. And we also enjoy flying kites quite a bit, but it was not permitted at Race Point this year because the endangered piping plovers were actually having something of a resurgence in their nesting season, which is very exciting. And I think there were still young birds in the nest, so there were no dogs on the beach and no kite flying because the plovers apparently see the shadows and the kites as predators, and it stresses the birds. We could have flown kites at nearby Herring Cove Beach, but we didn't visit Herring Cove in the day. That beach tends to be a little bit more crowded. Herring Cove is a wonderful place to see a sunset, however, and we did go for a few evenings to Herring Cove to hear some live music. There's a bonfire. There's a bit of a concession stand with some excellent local beer and lobster rolls, which were incredible. And then we got to see the amazing P-Town sunset. The sunset is also very beautiful on the bay side because the light comes from behind the town and sort of settles over all of the boats in the harbor. And there's just this magnificent moving light. We had excellent weather and many, many wonderful beach days, but I'm also glad of a cloudy, drizzly day when I visit P-Town because that's a day that I spend walking around on Commercial Street and I spend quite a lot of time in the town's library. The library has an amazing history, but I just love it because there's a half-scale replica of the Rose Dorothea, which is a sailing ship that won the Lipton Cup. And there's a half-scale model in the library on the second floor. The first time I saw it, a proprietor from a shop across the street said, "Have you been to the library?" And I was like, "No." I mean, on a vacation, usually the last thing you do is visit the town's library. That's kind of the last thing I do on a beach vacation. She said, "Oh, you have to go. It's been newly renovated, and what you need to do is go in, don't look at anything, just walk all the way up to the third floor and look down." So I did. When you get to the third floor, you're looking down on the deck of a ship, and the architecture of the building has been created to accommodate this half-scale model. And all around on the second floor is the children's section of the library. So the children are playing all around with this big ship sort of looming up above them. It's just really breathtaking and a lot of fun. So I usually take some time to take some postcards or some letter writing or some knitting and go there and just sit for a few hours in that very pleasant atmosphere. One of the things that I enjoy about a P-Town vacation is just the attitude of the people who live and work there and the attitude of all of the tourists, which is just very open-minded and lighthearted. The population of Provincetown year-round is about 3,000 people. And so there would never be enough local folks to staff all of the shops and all of the hotels and restaurants that are open during the high season. And so there are a lot of international young people, teenagers and college students, who come to work in retail, restaurant, hotel over the course of the summer. One enjoyable aspect of being there for a week is getting to know some of these young people and finding out where they're from and what they're studying in college, what they think of the United States, and where they're going to go after their summer is over, because they have a pretty well-established tradition of working very, very hard for the entire summer. It's not unusual for them to work 80 to 100 hours a week just to rack up as much money as they possibly can. Some of them have 2 and 3 jobs. And when they're done, they bike long distances to stay at the far end of town or maybe even in the neighboring North Truro. So these young people are working very, very hard. And at the end of the high season, many of them treat themselves to a little bit of travel in the United States before they go back overseas. So it's a lot of fun to ask them, you know, where they plan to travel before they go home. And in some cases, if you know that area, you can give them a few tips. Or if you plan to be traveling overseas yourself, it's a great opportunity to get advice and input from a real local about what's important to see and do and what some of the local customs are. So we have a lot of fun talking to those young folks, and just a lot of fun observing and people watching. In his book, one of the most telling things Michael Cunningham says about Provincetown is bad behavior is frowned upon. Unorthodox behavior is not. So people really have the opportunity to be themselves and be who they are in P-Town, and it just makes the place so much fun. Once we get there, we like to park the car and not really think about it again until we get in to go back home. But one evening, we had a little knitting incident where Samuel sat on my knitting again. At this point, it's really not Samuel's fault. It's my fault because I leave my knitting on the seat, and I can't believe that he wouldn't see it there, but he didn't. And so he cracked two of the DPNs that I was working with. And I was working on a design project, so I was a little bit frustrated that I couldn't make more progress on it. And he said, well, why don't we just go to the yarn store? And I'm like, Samuel, this is a beach town. Like, there isn't a yarn store in P-Town. There's stuff further down on the Cape, but I don't feel like leaving. There's too much traffic. So he starts Googling, because Samuel likes to Google. And he's like, no, there is a yarn store. P-Town Pearl. It just opened a month ago. I said, what? I could not believe there could be a yarn shop in Provincetown, because with so few year-round residents and the fact that when you're here, you're really in a beach mode, I didn't see anyone knitting anywhere when I was in town and or on the beach. And I was knitting quite a lot. So he said, no, there's a yarn store. It just opened. So we visited the lovely P-Town Pearl, and Ryan, the shop owner, was there. P-Town Pearl is a very charming and very well-stocked yarn shop. It has an amazing courtyard location, so I could see that it would be a prime spot to have some chairs outside and have a little knitting group. I think Ryan is doing a great job as a knitting evangelist, teaching knitting, and also he's interested in spinning, to some of the residents of P-Town and some visitors. A lot of people come and stay for the summer. I just found his selection and his prices really great. To replace my bamboo DPNs, I upgraded to some Knitter's Pride Cubics, because why not make an upgrade when you have the opportunity? And then I also perused the yarn selection. There's quite a great selection of both, you know, basic kind of workhouse yarns and some more sophisticated, luxurious choices. There isn't really an emphasis on local things. I think that's one area that maybe if he's going to appeal to tourists, I know a lot of people like to buy something from the local region. So maybe sort of like the greater Massachusetts, New England area. He could think about stocking some yarns from there. But summertime in a beach location isn't necessarily the time you think about knitting with a more rustic farm yarn. And I think bright colors and that kind of thing have more of an appeal in the location where he is. I picked up a skein of Cedar House Yarns, which is a new-to-me yarn dyer. And I bought some worsted weight yarn in the color Smoked Porter, which has lovely deep browns. And I think that will be a really good choice for a hat or mitts or something. It's gender neutral. And so I think that will be some useful addition to my stash. So we had a great visit with Ryan, and he engaged Samuel in a discussion of 80s rock anthem lyrics and how applicable those would be for yarn colorways, which was a really interesting conversation. But I wish Ryan well. He has one of the things I wanted to mention. His logo for the P-Town Pearl is one of the most beautiful graphics for a yarn store that I have ever seen. It's an oyster shell, and in the center is a yarn ball with two straight needles in it. He has a beautiful version, a graphic version on his website and on his business card, on the bags from his store, but mounted in the entrance to this courtyard where all the shops and businesses who are located there have their own plaque outside is a beautiful 3D version of this logo, and it's absolutely exquisite. So a lot of fun to visit, and I guess it happened to be good news after all that Samuel sat on my knitting project. After the purchase replacement of my DPNs, I made significant progress on a new design for a cowl. It's kind of a cowl that transitions to a small capelet, and I'm keeping in mind the asymmetrical appeal because I do plan to host the Asymmetrical again this fall. Some folks were asking about it. And I hope to bring a new design to the table for folks to knit along during the Asymmetrical. It's still in its final stages of design, so I will have more news about that in a future episode. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this little summertime excursion to Provincetown, Massachusetts, a place that is very, very dear to me, which I'm sure you could tell from my gushing over it for a half hour or so. If you ever have the chance to visit P-Town, I heartily encourage you to stay for a week or more. But if you find yourself on the Cape, it's always worth an afternoon or evening visit. The beaches are so pristine, the town so lively, the people so open-minded and fun-hearted that you're sure to have a really nice day. Acorns
are jobbing off my Jenny's hands. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry, leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, or following me on social media. Music for today's episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a mighty fine nature thing. 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 It's a